My name is John Troche. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, John.
This has been a lot of fun, and tonight we're going to be talking about steps 10 and 11. And these were two steps that when I really got serious about these directions that are in this book, I saw a huge change in my life. And I'm going to tell you about it as we go through it. You know, we could actually read all of this tonight, and I'm going to comment on everything we read and tell you about my experience. But last week we ended on steps 8 and 9. And, you know, I told you a bunch of amends stories. And I just want to, the recap that I'll give tonight is the one part we didn't really get to talk about was the ninth step, promises. So if you're new and maybe you don't know about this, but sometimes groups will read they call them the promises, and they read these promises, and I think it's important for us to know like where these are found and what it means, because sometimes I've heard people say like they get the impression that they hear those promises and they think like that's going to happen just from me coming to AA meetings and sitting in a room and listening to people and drinking your coffee and, you know, dating your women. Like, that's that I'm going to get those promises. But really, it's a totally different thing when you read this in context. This is as a result of getting through this process up to steps 8 and 9. And he says, if we're painstaking, and this is on page 83, if anybody wants to follow along, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They'll always materialize if we work for them. Now, when they talk about these promises, this isn't like a salesperson in the sense of, oh yeah, no, you're going to get this, and you're going to get this, and you'll get that too. You know, they're basically reporting to you what happened in their lives when they actually did this, which is a little bit different than just saying, well, here's a promise for you. How do you like this? Try this one on for size. If you think about the promises and what they're saying there, they're really like the anti-bedevilments, right? When you read about the bedevilments on 52, and he says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We could not control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Think about those two things in contrast with each other. The bedevilments and the promises. Right? Like, this is what I'm suffering. Those bedevilments, that's what I'm suffering with without a drink. I mean, it happens to me with a drink too, but you take away the drink, which is my only solution to this problem that I have, and I'm suffering with those bedevilments. I'm a prey to misery and depression. I can't seem to be of real help to other people. You know, like, it's just this feeling of that life is just, there's something not right about this world, and there's something not right about me, and I feel like I can see it, and why can't you? You know, and it really doesn't seem like this is really worth it at all, actually. It actually seems like this is just a bunch of trash. It's just garbage. Like, why would I cherish this? You know, because that's my experience of, like, just being alive in this world. You know, I don't have a drinking problem. I have a reality problem. I have a sober problem. All right, so by going through this work and getting through these steps to steps 8 and 9, and they give us these promises, which were the result, it was their experience as they did this, that's worth something there. You know, what he's describing, to be able to be comfortable in your own skin, sober, is like what we all wanted. I don't want the sobriety where I have white knuckles and I want to kill everybody I see. I don't want that. I want to be free. I want to be at peace. I want to be at ease. You know, like that even the term dis-ease, like I'm just not at ease, and I'd like to be at ease. So, you know, I think that's a really important, just I wanted the recap from last week is just that idea of like, well, why do we go through all that stuff, like these uncomfortable amends? I don't want to face these people. I don't want to have these conversations. I don't want to pay you back the money. All of that stuff that I don't want to do, why do I do it? Because there is something that happens as a result of doing that kind of work. And I don't say that because it's written in the book. I say that because it's written in the book, and it was also my experience when I did it. I started to see life could be completely different than what I'd experienced. That was amazing. And this thing right here where he says, they'll always materialize if they work for them. If we work for them. And this brings us to step 10. Right? So, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So there's a direction right there. When do you start doing your 10th step? As you start to make amends. It's right there in black and white. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. There was a guy in my group, Curtis, who, again, this was another part of the book where he would always chime in. You know, and he would say, when we have entered the world of the Spirit, he'd say, well, where was I before? And then he goes, I was in the world of self. Yeah, I was in the world of self. And now something's happened. I've entered into this world of the Spirit. Something is changing inside. The way I'm seeing things is changing, which is an amazing thing to happen. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Holy crap. Think about that. Our next function, grow in understanding and effectiveness. How can I be a more effective person in the world? With my family, with my coworkers, with the people about me, in my home group, wherever I am. How can I be more effective? How can I be a more effective sponsor? How can I be a more effective communicator? How can I? I mean, that's really the goal. If my goal is to be helpful to people, how can I be more effective at all those things? It's possible. Understanding. How can I get a better understanding of God's will for me on a daily basis? Where he would like me to be, what he would like me to do, the spiritual life, which is not a theory, I need to live it. He says, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. So how long am I doing this for?
Forever. Ever.
My lifetime. Right? That's the practice of this is about developing a practice in my life. I've been most of my life a great sprinter, right? Sometimes at certain points in my life I could be a miler. But I was never a marathon runner. And this is about becoming a marathon runner. How do you actually do this day after day after day? It's like these steps, it's kind of like you learn everything you need to know about this step in the prior steps. You've learned it. You've learned how to take inventory. You've learned how to pray. You've learned how to admit it to another person. You've learned how to make amends to people. Right? You've learned how to see when you're wrong and oh, what do I do when I see that I'm wrong? I have to make this right. You've learned all that stuff, right? And now AA goes, okay, now take that and do it here. Now take that and do it again over there. Now, you know what? Here, mix up the order that you do it in. Do it in a slightly different order and do it again. Then do it like this and do it again. And then do it again. And then do it again. And then, you know what? Tomorrow, do it again. And just keep doing it. Like, just keep doing that. Like, you have learned some skills. Now you got skills, right? Take those skills and actually get good at it. You know, and like, I don't know about you guys, but for me, anything that I ever got good at, it was only because I did it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is about, do it over and over and over again. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, and he doesn't say if they crop up, he says when they crop up, because they will, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and to make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I came into AA, love and tolerance of others was far from my code. That was not even on my top 100 of things I'd even want to consider, love and tolerance of others. And care about you. All I cared about was me. Right? Love and tolerance of others is my code now. Something's happened as I've gone through this process. Something is happening to me, with me. I mean, it's almost like I can't even put my finger on what's happening. But it's an amazing thing that I'm starting to get to this place where, yeah, that's where I want to shoot for that. I want to be loving. I want to be tolerant. I want to help people. I never used to. I mean, and I'm just talking about from my point of view, my experience. I know some people have different experiences than me. But my experience was I was not interested in helping people. I just wasn't. I didn't care about you. I really didn't. When people told me about that I was going to have to help people, it made my skin crawl. I don't want to help you. You know, so now something's happening to me where I want to help you. Oh, I see. Oh my God, I'm seeing like there's something to this. You know, like the way I'm feeling is different. And now we get into this. So we covered the 9-step promises. These are the 10-step promises. And these promises are actually promises that should probably be read at like every beginner's meeting. Because this is, when I first came in, this is what I really want. I mean, all that stuff in the 9-step, that's great. And I'd like that. But like, really? I want this when I first came in. And it goes, and we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. So they talk about in step 2, coming to believe that this power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. In step 10, they're talking about it's happening, right? Sanity has been restored. If you do this work, you will be restored to sanity. What does that mean? I mean, I like to talk about like if you put like bleach right in front of me and you said, drink that bleach. There's no way you could get me to do it. I don't care how much money you want to offer me. I'm not drinking bleach. I'm sane, right? But somehow, like back in the day, I can't see that alcohol to me is like bleach. Drinking bleach, it's killing me. It's destroying my life. I mean, it's just there's so much evidence that it's a killer. And yet I don't have the same sanity that keeps me from picking up bleach to pick up the booze. So I need that kind of sanity. I need sanity to be restored. He says, we'll seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. When I came in here, anything for that to happen for me. To be like, I don't want to do it. Like the insanity that I was going through when I came back the last time, it was like insufferable. I mean, every single day, I really felt like the voice in my head was going, you know you're going to do it anyway. You know you are. There's no way you're going to make it from this day to the day you die clean and sober. You know it, and I know it. So why are we messing around here? Why are we doing this? You know what? You can come back. You can come back next week. Come back next. Let's just do it one time. Just one time. Let's make a weekend out of it. A couple weeks. Let's do a couple weeks. Like three. Let's do like a month or two. Let's do it. And you can come back. What are you gonna lose? You have like, you know, 2 weeks right now. Big deal. Big deal. Big deal. 2 weeks. You had 7 years at one point. 2 weeks is nothing. You can do 2 weeks on your head, man. And this is like going on. This is going on like 24/7. That's the insanity. And I'd give anything to have that thing where I would recoil from it as from a hot flame. Anything, please, God. And the fear I'm going through is like, this is going to be the rest of my life, isn't it? I'm going to be fighting this for the rest of my life. And I get like when newcomers come in and they're going through that battle and they think that's what sobriety is going to be for the rest of their life, fighting this. Oh my God! And if it was, I'd be with you, man. Like I take a bullet. I'd rather have a bullet than have that pain for the rest of my life. The good news that Alcoholics Anonymous gives us and the good news that I found out is that it's not true. I don't have to fight this for the rest of my life. He says, we react sanely and normally and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Think about that. Think about what they're saying. You don't have to fight this. It's not a fight. You're not waking up in the morning going, okay, here's another day. I'm not going to drink today. That's the plan. No drink. Me and the day without a drink. That's what it's going to be. And then the voice going, but you're going to drink. You know you're going to drink. That there's none of that. They're talking about no fight. Place in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Can you imagine feeling safe and protected? Right? Imagine feeling that. Like I don't care if you're really safe or protected. Imagine feeling that way. That you are safe and protected. That nothing can touch you. That you are okay. That'd be amazing. And by the way, that's been my experience as well. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. That's our experience. That's how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Right? The caveat is I need to maintain my spiritual life. If I want those promises that they're offering me right there, the price is living by a spiritual way of life. That's it. Spiritual way of life. What does that mean to me? Right? All this whole time as we're going through this process, everything is, well, what does this mean to me? Earlier on in the book, they say, you know, when you hear spiritual terms in this book, think about them as like what they mean to you. Don't worry about what it means to somebody else. Have an open mind. Be a person of consideration. It says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. So the proper use of the will, right, because I do have willpower, the proper use of the will is trying to align what I want with what God wants, right? What I want with what God wants. And it's very easy for me to get way off track thinking, well, what I want is what God wants, you know, and twisting that thing up. It's why I need other people. It's why I need people to bounce things off of. I need to hear direction, guidance. I need sounding boards, right? Because I can get real wrapped up in like, no, that's God. She's God's will for me. I know for sure. We're getting married, you know, and like I get ideas like that in my head. So I need people to really kind of corral me in. Now, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we've carefully followed directions, we've begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we've become God-conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. So right here at this point, again, here's another one, a vital sixth sense. Think about that. Like, what? Like, is that like ESP? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm gonna be reading people's minds. I'm going to have telepathy. I'm going to like be supernatural. I'll have superpowers, something. Like, the way that they're describing this is actually like pretty cool. Like, yeah, I'd like that. That'd be cool. Sixth sense? I'd like to have a sixth sense. Right, I'd like to have something that kind of, like a barometer that kind of tells me like when I'm kind of doing the right thing and when I'm not. I'd like something like that. So my experience with step 10, which is for me the culmination of these other steps up to this point, taking inventory, prayer, being mindful of things that are objectionable and not wanting to practice that stuff anymore. Being mindful of other people, and if I've harmed somebody, making amends promptly, right? All of the culmination of all that stuff on a regular basis, on a daily basis, day in, day out, in real time. That's what this is to me. And there's a couple different things that I want to talk about. Number one, let me tell you about, this is actually an interesting story. I have a dog. I love my dog. Her name is Sookie, and she is awesome. And I'll do like anything for this dog. And so this 10-step story is about, I don't know if you guys have to do this around here, but in the city, we have to make sure we clean up after the dog, so we're always buying poop bags, right? Okay. So this is a story about poop bags. I mean, it's stupid, but it works. Okay. So in my neighborhood, I live in the Bronx. In my neighborhood, they had just, it was a couple years ago, they just built this new little strip mall thing right on Broadway. And there was a Petco in there, a new one. And as you can imagine, parking is a premium over there. It's really like difficult. And they have a little parking lot, but there's not a lot of spots in there. So if you get there and you get one, you're lucky. So it's like for some reason, I think I wasn't working that day. I was like, I had a day off, and I'm doing like errands and stuff like that. And I'm like in the spirit, you know, I'm just like doing well. And I get over to Petco, and I pull in, and the parking god smiled on me. He said, oh, here's a spot. And I went, whoa, all right, great, this is perfect. And I pull in, and I park my car, and I go into Petco, right? And I get Sookie, her food, and her this, and her that, and her poop bags. And I go up to the front, and the kid at the front is kind of like a doo-doo-doo. You know, he's like a flatliner, you know what I mean? And I give him the stuff, and he rings it up. But, like, I can tell, like, he's just kind of, like, not really there, you know? And he rings it up, and I go, okay, I pay him the money. And then he puts all my stuff in a bag, but he doesn't put the poop bags in the bag with everything else, and it's sitting there. And I look at it and I look at him and I go, you got that, right? And he looks at me and he looks at it and he goes, yeah, right? And I go, in my head, immediately I go, oh, he did not get that. Like, he totally did not charge me for those bags, totally. I just know it. Like, it was like, bing! And I go, all right, and I grab it, and I start to walk out. And as I'm walking, that voice, right, goes, you know he didn't charge you. And I go, but I asked him, and he wasn't bright enough to realize that he hadn't. And then when I brought it to his attention, he didn't even have the fortitude to say, oh, I was wrong, let me charge you. So it's on him, right? That's the quick argument in my head. And I walk out the door. Now, they'd all, in this little spot, there's also like a Chipotle. So I go, oh, I'm going to get my lunch. I mean, this is perfect, one-stop shopping. I'll put the stuff in the car, and I'll go get the Chipotle. Now I'm at Chipotle, and the voice goes, you know you didn't pay for those bags. And I'm going, who's to say? You know, like, who? Maybe I did pay for it. You know what I mean? Like, why are you going to bust my chops about this? Like, come on, leave me alone. Let me get my lunch, and let me enjoy everything. I got off. Once, for once in life, okay? So I get my lunch and I go, and then I get into my car, and it's nagging at me. And I go, Clark. I go, and the voice goes, you know, when you go home, you're going to realize that you didn't pay for that. And you're going to have to come back here and pay for it. And you're here right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm backing out of my spot, and I go, yeah, but how am I going to know? And then all of a sudden, as I'm pulling out, I go, dude, why don't you just look at the receipt? Like, for a normal person, this would have been a two-second thing. They would just look at the receipt and be done. Like, it took me this whole conversation in my head to go, oh, just look at the receipt. Light bulb, and I go, all right, but I'm pulling out. So I go, let me pull over here and look at the receipt. Pull over, I look at the receipt. There's no poop bags on the receipt. Look, it's clear as day. And I'm like, look at me. I did it. I caught myself in real time, and I'm going to make this right. But there's one problem. I had left my parking spot. And as soon as I left my parking spot, somebody had gone right in. And now I'm like, oh, man. And there, you know, nothing's opening up. And I don't have time to sit here and wait. I'm a busy guy, right? Like, that in my head, I'm like, you know, it's my day off. I have nowhere to go, really. Nothing really to do. But I'm like, I can't wait. So I go, let me just run in and just pay this guy the money. Run in, run out. It'll be real quick, right? And I go, I get out of my car, and I look like this. And I see where, like, my car is. And right on the wall where my car is, there's a sign that says, tow-away zone, right? And I go, I'm going to be in so, like, in and out so fast, there's no way that they'll ever, like, it's not going to happen. You know what I mean? I'm going to be in and out, right? There's nothing to worry about. So I run in, and of course there's a line now. And I'm like, oh. I go, listen, buddy, look, I didn't pay you for these bags. I got to pay you for these bags. Let me just give you the money real quick. And he's, you know, like, well, you know, like, very slow, you know, he's very slow, and I'm a little annoyed that he's as slow as he is, and I can't see my car from where, because they block the window with all their merchandise, and I'm like, oh, come on. So I finally give him the money, and this woman that's right in line, she goes, man, that's so good of you, you're such a good person. And I go, I know, I try to live by a spiritual way of life, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking that stuff, you know, but I feel very virtuous. And I give him the money, and I'm like, man, this is great. Like, I'm living this, man. I'm living it, right? And I'm in there for a total of about maybe 2 minutes, maybe three at the most, you know. Clock's ticking, but I'm, you know, I was really fast, and I got, and I run out, and I come, and as soon as I open the door, there's a tow truck, and he's loading my car on the truck. And I'm, like, in a state of disbelief, because I can't believe they could do that fast. Mm. And I go, no, you don't understand. And they look at me and they go, no, we get it. We understand perfectly well. You're in a tow zone, blah, blah. And I go, listen, you don't understand. See, I got these poop bags, and I didn't pay for them, and then I realized I had to pay for them, and I had to run, and I was just doing the right thing, and you don't understand, I'm not to be blamed, it's not my fault, like, come on, you gotta let me go, come on, you gotta understand me, guys. And they don't care, you know, and I'm looking at these guys, I'm like, come on, And the guy goes, fine, I'll cut you a break. He goes, I'll cut you off here, but there's a toe cut of $125. I go, are you kidding me? I go, buddy, come on, give me a break. He goes, I'm giving you a break. If I bring it across the street, you're going to have to pay $250 to get the car. So it's your choice. What do you want to do? And I want to kill him. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to kill you. And I go, fine. And I dig into my pocket, and I give him my credit card, and I'm standing there. Now, this is the worst part of it, is I'm standing there, and there's two of them. One guy that's actually, like, putting me on the tow truck, and another guy that's just, you know, like the spectator who's writing the notes. And the spectator that's writing the notes, he's writing, he looks up at me, and he goes, yeah, you should have took those bags. and I go like this. I want to like you. I want to be like, you son of a, you. You know what? You're the kind of person that would do that, and you're a piece of garbage. And I live a spiritual way of life. And I want to say all this stuff. I'm like, and you fat, and like all this stuff. I just want to like say all this stuff to him. I'm just like insanity. And I go, I'm trying not to live that way anymore. Like, rip my teeth. Right now, I'm incensed because I did the right thing. And I got pegged for it. Like, what the hell, God? Like, I thought I was your dude. You know what I mean? Like, we were having a moment. Like, I was doing your work, and you just screwed me. And I'm mad. I pay the $125. I get in my car. I roll away, and I'm just, like, seething. I'm just seething. I feel it. It's like one of those resentments that it hits like a freight train. And I drive home, and I get inside, and I'm just like, the only thing I know how to do is inventory. And I just start writing inventory. And what I do, I send it to my sponsor, and I call my sponsor, and we're talking, I'm telling him, and this and that and the other. It was about maybe a day or two later. I calmed down, and I got it. But it was about a day or two later, I remember I was talking to my friend Joe in Queens. And Joe was like a no-nonsense kind of guy. And I'm telling him this story, and you know, and he goes, well, you know what happened, don't you? I go, no, what happened? He goes, see, you did the right thing, but you did it the wrong way. And I go, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess I did it the wrong way. Because, see, I had that Jiminy Cricket voice when I was at the register. It was there. See, the voice to do the right thing was there. And it was my resistance to that voice that was the thing that eventually got me to the position that I was in. See, I could have straightened it out right then and there at the very beginning, but I thought, hey, listen, I'm going to get away with one. And isn't that always the way for people like us? I just want to get away with one. I don't care like how menial the price is. Just the thrill of getting away with one is just like, yes, I got away with one, right? But I can't live that way anymore. And so I have this new operating system that's been installed by doing this work that tells me when I start to do the wrong thing, it starts to give me that thing that says, dude, maybe not. Maybe don't do this. And it's on me to listen to that. That's what happened. So that is my real time 10th step poop bag story, right? That really relates to like what it looks like doing this stuff in real time. Now here's another thing that we got into on with 10th step stuff, and then I'll get into step 11. Is there's this thing called steal on steal, and it's not an AA thing. It's just like a thing that some AA people will do. It's like a little group, and you get like 4, 5, 6 people, whatever, and you meet every week. And there's a bunch of questions. And all the questions are all based on the three sides of the triangle. Right? And we ask ourselves, where am I in recovery, unity, and service? We'll ask those questions. And there's a ton of questions we ask, and we go around the room and we ask and we answer the questions. Where am I in recovery, unity, and service? What step am I on? What am I doing? What kind of service am I doing? Who am I helping? And we get into this conversation, we have spiritual consent with each other. We can say anything to each other, and we say things like, is it possible? Right? Like, is it possible when you're judging other people, you're playing God? Like, you can ask questions like that to people and really, like, zing them, you know? And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, in a short amount of time in a group like that, when you do that, you get some really good feedback. One of the things that happened in this group was my friend Matthew, who was a part of it, he really liked talking about, if I'm looking at this thing, this program in all parts of my life, well, what does it look like in like my career? Like, am I doing what God would have me be doing? You know, or am I just living paycheck to paycheck, just paying the bills and just really not doing the kind of service that God would have me doing at work? And so he would raise this question over and over and over again about what are we doing professionally? Is it in alignment with God's will? Interesting question, something I never really considered. And at that point in my life, I was working at a job where I had a career. I knew how to make money doing it, but it was completely unsatisfying to me. It would just dried up for me. You know, like I go to work and it's like Monday morning, I'm like, ugh, I got five more days of this, you know? And I'm waiting for Friday, which is a miserable way to live your life, by the way. You know, and I'd always heard, like, if you do something that you love, you'll never work a day in your life. And I always wanted something like that. Like, that would be perfect, you know, to have something that you really cared about and really loved. So Matthew kept on bringing this stuff up. And what was interesting about this group, and when you really get clear about your intentions and what's going on, is every single guy in that group, in our careers, we all were brought into different areas. We were all brought to different places. You know, Matthew was a guy that traveled all around the country. He was in New York at that time, and now he's in San Francisco, and he's been following his dreams, doing what he does. He works for, you know, like, at that time he worked for Steinway Pianos. He's a piano guy. And, you know, he did amazing things, like working with Lady Gaga and being at, you know, the Philharmonica and all kinds of stuff like that. And it was, like, incredible, like, what he was able to do in his career with what he enjoys. You know, Sean had got this opportunity in North Dakota, of all places. Like, Sean never thought about, I want to go to North Dakota. Who does? I mean, really. You know what I mean? Nothing against North Dakota. It's just not something that we would ever think about. But he got this opportunity, and Sean ended up going to North Dakota and did amazing. He just recently came back to New York not too long ago. You know, and then Josh ended up, he was like air conditionings, right? He did like that kind of work, and he ended up working with Disney on Ice and traveling around the world. And, you know, Josh would be in Japan, you know, for a couple weeks, and then he'd be in Brazil, and he's traveling around the world, like, following his dreams. And so, like, this stuff is, like, there is so much in here that you can get out of it. It's really like, you know, Mark Houston used to talk about, like, if you go to the ocean with a thimble, you get a thimble full of the ocean. Go with a bucket, you get a bucket full. How much do you want? How free do you want to be? How far do you want to take this thing? Right? For me, what happened was that it opened my eyes up to certain things in my life, and I saw, you know, like, I'm just not satisfied doing what I'm doing. You know, like, for me, a life where I'm working at a desk and I'm going, this sucks, and I'm on Monday, you know, praying for Friday is not what I want. And just things, opportunities appeared in my life, and it just took me in a different way altogether. And I, you know, I can say, like, what I do today has been, like, one of the greatest things in my life. I get to do something that I love. It's not work. You know, like, to go to a place and, like, you're there and you don't want to leave, like, God, man, that how much is that worth? To have something where, like, you're happy to be there. You don't even want to leave. Like, that's the place for you, and you're doing the right thing, and you're helping people, and it's feeding your soul. Like, that's really the kind of stuff we're talking about in these later steps that can happen. But the steps that come before have to happen first. We have to clear away a lot of this junk so we can start seeing what's available to us. Last thing, step 10. So last night, I'm at my home group, and we're talking about miracles. Kind of, you know. I mean, we talk about miracles all the time in here. And I said, yeah, you know what? Like, if I ever forget what a disaster my life is, I have so many people in this group that remind me of what it was like for me. And I see miracles every single day. And then I called out my friend Lindsay, and I go, Lindsay's a guy, she's a freaking miracle. You know, like, I remember when Lindsay was, like, struggling. Like, she was, like, she could not get it. You know, at one point her sobriety date with this was the same month and year as mine. And she didn't keep that for long. And it went on for a long time like that. And I remember thinking about, for her, like, God, she's going to die. Like, she's just not going to get it. You know, like, I saw that about her. And eventually she got a big book sponsor and she started working the steps. And at some point along the way, Lindsay was transformed completely. I wouldn't even, like, if you met Lindsay now and then you saw, like, video of what she was like, it's like night and day. It's incredible. You know, and I go, Lindsay's a miracle, you know. Now, here's the thing. Like, in my mind, I'm saying something nice about her. But, like, you know, somebody else in the room kind of gets, like, I'm digging at her, you know. Like, I'm saying, like, she's kind of a loser or something, you know. And so they said, like, wow, like, you really gave it to her. And I was like, oh, like, that wasn't my intention at all. Like, that's not what I was trying to do. And so, like, 10-step today, like, even, like, something like that, it's like, oh, maybe I need to talk to her and, like, see if, like, I offended her and say something. I mean, because that's not my intent. And I want to be considerate of other people. So I give her a call today and we have a conversation. She's fine. But the 10-step looks like that in our lives, where we just become considerate of other people. Try to be, right? When we don't catch ourselves and then we catch ourselves, we do something about it. It's about being prompt. So now we get into step 11, and this is some crazy stuff in here. Step 11, page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy in this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It'd be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite, valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Now here, these are like directions right here. And I got to tell you, for a long time I read this, and I didn't even realize that they were really directions. I was like, oh, that's nice, you know, that's kind of cool. You know, that's a nice little passage right there. I'm not doing anything with it, you know, like I don't ask myself these questions at night. But that's, you know, that'd be cool to do something like that, maybe, right? And I don't even see that these are directions. He says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Ask yourself these questions. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? And were we thinking ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? Okay? So ask yourself those questions. Now, here's the thing, and this is what it looked like for me. And this is why it's important to be like in a group where people are kind of doing this stuff and they're talking about it. Because what happens is, right, you hear somebody talking about it, or my experience was I'd hear somebody talking about it. Right, like Pete, right? Pete would talk about this. And I'd go, after he talked about it for like, you know, the 30th time, I'd go, wait, Pete's saying that like he does that every night. You know what I mean? Like Pete keeps talking about this like he's actually doing it. And you know what? As a matter of fact, Mikey talks about it like he does this too. And so does Tony. And so does Danielle. They're talking about this like this is something that they actually do. Now, this is where your ego and pride can actually work for you, right? So I'd be going like, maybe I should start doing this every night too, so I can talk about it, you know? Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be the one guy that's not doing this, you know? Like, I should do this. So now I start trying to do this. And now here's the deal, man. When I first started trying to actually do this, like, every night, it was so hard. It was so painful. Like, literally, I'd be like, okay, I'll try and memorize those questions. And then I'd get in bed, right? It'd be at the end of the night, and I'd get in bed, and I'd go, oh, yeah, the questions. Was I self? Nope. No, I wasn't resent. Nope. I didn't do apology? Nope. No, I'm good. And off to bed. And there was nothing of substance to that, except for the simple fact that I was trying to do it, right? It wasn't real. I was really not getting anything out of it, but it was now attempting to try to do this, and I saw how pathetic it was. Like after you know, a couple months of that, it's like this is nonsense. I know I'm not doing it right, so let me try something else. And then I taped it on my nightstand so that I can't forget it, and maybe I'll kneel while I do it. But then my wife's there, so just, all this stuff is going on in my head. And then the thing that changed this for me was one day. A buddy of mine goes, do you know that there's an app that you can do your nightly review on? And I said, get out of here. He said, yeah, it's, you know, he told me what it was and I got it. And it was the coolest thing because it had all the questions. I could type them in and I could email it to anybody I wanted to. And that was the coolest thing about it was because, see, once I typed it out and I would email it to my sponsor mainly, but also to other guys at different points, and I would send it out. I had proof that I was actually doing this. Right now, it was like, oh, like, I was getting good at. Now I'm sitting, and I'd be like, okay, and I'd sit there with the app, right, at the end of my day, and I'd just review it, right, real quick stuff. It doesn't have to take a long time. You can go through it real quick, but you can be thorough too. Oh, I have to do this. I have to do that. Bam, 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 and I'm done. And you know what that did for me? It started clearing out the stuff that would build up during the day. Anything that wasn't caught with step 10. It's clearing it out, right? I'm getting clear about what my day looks like on a daily basis. And it's not all red ink. Right? I'm also doing some good stuff too. Like, wait, look at this. I sponsor this guy, I talk to this guy, I went and did this, I helped this person, I spoke here. All these different things that I'm also seeing that I'm doing well. Pretty cool. Now, he says, we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. That would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed in a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Okay, so, on awakening, this is something that actually started for me very early on in sobriety. And what happened was, I'm at this job, and I'm sober, right? But I still mess up, like, all the time. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I'm always doing the wrong thing, because I'm always, I will spend a lot of effort and energy in trying to make it look like I'm doing something, because I really don't want to be doing something, and if I actually just use that energy to do something, I'd be not bad, but I'm not, you know? So I would constantly be getting in trouble, and it was embarrassing, because it was one thing when that stuff would happen to me when I was drinking and using, right? But now I'm clean and sober, and I'm still doing the same stupid stuff. Like, what's wrong with me? It's kind of embarrassing. And so I have a conversation with my sponsor, you know, kind of early on, and I'm like, you know, and I'm telling him, like, you know, it sucks. You know, I hate this. And he goes, well, what are you doing with On Awakening? I go, what are you talking about? He goes, like, when you wake up, like, what do you do? I go, what do I do? This is what I used to do. I'd sleep to the last possible second, right? I'd hit snooze about 84,000 times, right? And then finally, when it was like, I did not have another nanosecond to waste, I would shoot out of bed like my hair was on fire. I would run around my apartment, get whatever I needed to get. I'd shoot out the door into my car. I'd race out into the streets. I'd cut you off. And I'd give you the finger because that was your fault. And that's how I start my day, right? And then I'm wondering why there's all this chaos in my day. Like, there's no anything. I'm not doing anything to start my day the right way. It starts with chaos, and the chaos ensues. So he goes, why don't you try this just with work? All you got to do is, you don't even have to take a long time. Wake up 5 minutes early. Take 5 minutes and consider what you have to do for the day. Okay, like, I mean, I was just willing, I was desperate enough to try it. And so, like, On Awakening began with me with doing that. And I would think about, what do I have to do today? Okay, I have to do this job in Brooklyn, and then I have to go across to Queens, and then I have to make sure I pick this other thing up. And I would just go over things. I only did it for work. And I'd go over all the stuff I had to do in my head for work. And I just saw, like, my day started going, like, way, like, a lot smoother. You know, it just started happening. Now, here's the thing. This was the thing that really kind of was an aha moment. One day, I don't know how much time had passed, but one day something had happened. And they look at me at work and they go, can you please go and fix this thing that just happened? You're the only one that can do this. Please, will you do it? And I go, yeah, sure. And all of a sudden I realized, like, see, I was the guy that always, like, when something happened, they would look at me like, what did you do? Like, what did you do? You know, like, I don't know how you did this, but we know you did. It has to do with you, we're sure. You know? But now they're not saying that. They're saying, like, can you fix this thing? Well, like, all of a sudden, like, you know, like, I had, over time, I had, through my action and things going smoother, like, I had changed their perception of who and what, how I acted and what I did. And now they had confidence in me that I could go and do things for them that they needed to be done, and they can trust that I would do it. And I was like, oh my God, this stuff works. Now, I don't know how long had passed. Like, I don't. But time had passed. And I started to see, like, this is important. Like, On Awakening, like, how I start my day is really important. Now, the next thing that happened with On Awakening is, I was a big Joe Hawk fan. I loved Joe Hawk, and I would listen to his recordings all the time. And Joe would talk about meditation a lot. And he'd talk about meditating twice a day. And I would listen, and I'd go, yeah, I'm not doing that at all. Like, I don't do it. Like, I don't meditate. But I, you know, Joe was, I was like a fan of Joe's, and I thought he was, you know, I liked his message and I liked what he had to say and I wanted what he had, and he did this thing and he had a practice, and I started getting the idea that maybe I should develop a practice. And so I start trying to meditate. And at first, it was so hard. Like, I would wake up. This is what I would do. I'd be like, all right, as soon as you wake up, you got to do On Awakening, okay? And I would wake up, and like, in my head, it would be like, all right, On Awakening. I'd be like, all right, do it. And I'd sit. I'd be like, all right, do it. And I'd sit, and like, within like 2 seconds of like sitting, my head is just going. Going. See, like, I had no idea how much stuff was in my head. I had no idea how loud my head was. I had no idea. And it was, like, hard. You know, like, it was hard to sit still, and, like, it was just all this stuff is going on in my head. And I'm like, oh, I can't meditate for, like, 5 minutes. My head won't let me. It's just crazy. So, like, I had the initial experience of failing, or what seemed like failing, at meditation for a period of time. But I kept at it. And one day, a friend of mine from Brooklyn, a guy named Yanush, I found out that he was really into meditation. Like, I mean, like, really, like, the guy has, like, this long beard, you know, like, he's in full, the meditation stuff. And I go, you know, hey, listen, do you think maybe, you know, you could teach me some stuff, you know? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And so we start working together with meditation, and he starts teaching me all these different techniques. Right, and I started discovering that there's all these different, like, there's a whole world of things that we can do in the name of meditation. You know, there's different techniques, like, you know, there's mindfulness, there's breathing, you know, like, just focusing on your breath. You know, there's loving kindness meditation. There's all these different ways that you could. There's like tracking what's going on in your body, right, and just not trying to control your mind, letting it do what it has to do, but focusing. Right, and getting quiet. And what began to happen for me when I started really taking that seriously, it's like one of the times in my recovery where it was like it got like the turbo shot, you know, like all of a sudden it was just like I started noticing things changing rapidly, and like I got quieter, you know, like something happened to me where it was just like there was a stillness, and it was almost like there was a volume dial on my brain. That I was able to just, I didn't turn off the thinking. It was still there, but it just got lower, you know, and I paid less attention to it. And it didn't mean as much to me, you know. And I would, like, thoughts that used to drive me insane, I would hear it and I would just laugh and be like, that's funny, you know, that's a funny thought, you know. But it didn't have the same effect on me. And the meditation was starting to do that. And then I heard somebody say somewhere, I don't even remember where I heard it, said something like, I heard this thing about, I am not my thinking mind. I am not my mind and I am not my body. And I remember hearing that and going, the hell is that supposed to mean? You know, like, I'm not my thinking mind. But, like, something about that, like, just struck. Like, what, you know, and I just, like, what does that mean? And then I started to see, like, you know, there's been huge chunks of my life where I am so confused that I think my mind is who I am. All that stuff that's going on, that's me. Right, I don't want to let go of my old ideas because I think that those are mine. Those are my ideas. I'm not letting that go. Like, I thought that up. It's pretty smart. That's a genius idea. You should try it. It's going to help you. You know? Like, I want to hold on to the stuff. And, like, when I started to realize the mind was just doing what it does, and there was a way to get past that, to short-circuit it, and realize that the mind is a much better tool than it is a master, you know, use it for the things it's intended to do. Where are my keys? Where do I have to go tomorrow? Right? What's coming up next Wednesday, right? Things like that, not like 60,000 thoughts about me, and more about me. You know, constantly there's a movie going on in my head, and it's all about me. I'm the main star, right? You guys are all bit players. You know, don't ever get the mistaken idea, the mistaken thought that you're the star of my movie. You're not. I'm the star, right? And like, you know, that whole world that I get caught up in, I had to find a way to get out of it. And I started to see that a meditation practice really did that in like this amazing way. So he says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. Again, they're talking about developing a discipline, developing a practice. It's not going to happen overnight. Just do it. Just do it, like, do it today, and then tomorrow do it again, and then do it again after that, and then just keep doing it. And then don't stop. Just keep doing it. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it's not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. So, again, look at the language that they're using. Being inspired, the plane of inspiration. On the page before, he talked about vital sixth sense. Right? Like, think about this stuff that they're starting to say. See, like, I used to have inspiration, but it was always really bad stuff that I would be inspired by. Like, let's rob McDonald's, you know? Like, that's my inspiration, right? Like, yeah, let's do that. But now, that's not the inspiration that comes up. Like, things come up, like the one that said, hey, you should probably call Lindsay and make sure you didn't offend her, right? Or you should do X, Y, and Z. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. We be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We're careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we've been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. In this book, right, they are telling us to have an open mind. In this book, they're saying to us, hey, there's many great inspirational books out there. Go find whatever speaks to your soul. Right? Like, if you find out that Tibetan Buddhism is your thing, then do it, man. Or if your thing is like, native shamanism, North American shamanism, or if it's, being a Wiccan, or you're into Norse mythology, whatever it is you're into, follow it. You know what I mean? Like, this is not this thing, like, sometimes people get up here, like, well, no, there's, they're talking about God and a Christian God, and it's not. It's whatever works for you. It's whatever spirituality means to you. It's a completely personal adventure for you to find out for yourself. It's between you and that power. That's a beautiful thing, right? That's not between you and anybody else. It's between you and whatever your idea of a God is. Pretty cool. Also, be quick to see where religious people are right. For years, I was brought up Catholic. And for years, religion, I hate religion. Like a lot like Bill, the burning and chicanery and all that stuff and these religious people and they're hypocrites and screw them and I hope they die and blah, blah, blah. But how about you take a look at where they're right? Like the things that they're doing that are right. Look at some of the religious people that you hate so much, but look how like they're living productive lives and you're like, you've been missing for a week and a half and your family thinks you're dead. You know what I mean? Like they're living a life that's meaningful. See what they have on the ball. Instead of constantly just condemning people, become open. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. Burning up of energy foolishly, right? All of the energy I wasted on how am I going to, conquer the world and make everybody do what I think they should do. And that constant energy that was just put into that meaningless, endeavor. Here they're talking about, can I get with an idea that works? Here's an idea that works, right? I'm just here to play a role. There is a God and I'm not it. Go with it. I'm safe and protected. That's an idea that works. If it works for you, try it. See if it works for you. If it doesn't, you'll find another one that does. But getting into this idea of, I don't know what's best for me. I think I do, but I don't. So this, what they're describing here is not about a program where everything goes my way. It's not going to happen. Right? The dog's going to die. Cancer's coming. You're going to lose the house. You're going to lose the car. You're going to get a flat tire. Hopefully none of that's going to happen all in 1 week. Right? It's going to be spread out over a lifetime. But things are going to happen. Right? The rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. It's just the way of life. How can I be at peace in the middle of the storm? Ah, that's a program that I want. A program where I can be at peace no matter what's happening out there. Do I believe that's possible? If I don't believe that's possible, then I'm probably right. It's not going to be possible for me. Right? What I believe, what the ideas that I plug into have a huge influence on how this is going to work for me. So I need to open myself up to possibility. And then he says, you know, here's the shortest paragraph in the whole book. It works. It really does. It works. This stuff works. I'm here. I'm up here to give testimony to the fact that living by this way of life works. You know, it's just life is easier. You know, or life is not easier. My experience of life is easier. I'm not at the whims of like all these erratic emotions. I don't suffer from the effects of the bedevilments in my life. I am. The promises that have been described in these last two pages, 9-step promises, 10-step promises, they're in my life on a daily basis. I get to feel like I'm a blessed person. I mean, who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want to wake up and you feel blessed? And you go to sleep and you feel blessed. And you live your life and you feel blessed. It's pretty cool. So we alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we've just outlined. But that's not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. This whole thing, faith is very important in this whole deal. But it's faith with works, faith with action. So the action that we're talking about in steps 10 and 11 is just pretty much the whole program on a daily basis. How do I live this program on a daily basis? How do I develop a relationship with a power greater than myself? What does it look like to live by spiritual principles? What does that mean to me? I mean, these are all like amazing questions that we can ask ourselves, and just, it's really not even in the answering of the questions, it's in the considering of the questions, right? That's the heart of what we're talking about here. What's possible? Can you have a life, when they say, remember, some of the older people in the room, you've heard this, where they would say, my life is beyond my wildest dreams, and like, yeah, whatever, I have pretty wild dreams, buddy, like, you know, don't give me that nonsense. But really, that idea of like, Your life can be beyond your wildest dreams because you never could have considered that these things could be possible, to have a life like this. It's pretty amazing. So anyway, I wanted to save some time for people to speak tonight on steps 10 and 11. Thank you.